sugar all beignets. Hey y'all, it's Shelley. I've got a super fun guest to introduce you to today. His name is Jonathan Wiggins, and he is the lead pastor of Brez Church in Loveland, Colorado. He's a longtime friend and a remarkable guy and one of the wisest people I know. He's also humble, and he wouldn't want me to build him up with such a glowing introduction. So I'm saying all this before he gets on to protect the not-so-innocent. Seriously, I've been learning from Jonathan for years now. You're about to see what I mean. But first, let me do some quick housekeeping. There are all kinds of new developments at the website. Drumroll, the new Finding Deep and Wide study aids are available. They include a free printer-friendly handout, a more in-depth workbook, and a three-part video teaching series. And they're all designed to help you dig into the message of finding deep and wide alone or with a group. You can find all the details and purchasing information at bellofallthingssouthern.com. There's also a new blog post up. So don't miss that. I'm talking about dormant butt syndrome. Yeah, I'm serious. It's a thing. I also posted about my newfound skill, which I suspect could be a related issue. But here's my big announcement. I'm making homemade bread. I know, it's not world peace, and I didn't cure COVID, but I am now a maker of bread. To be even more specific, I speak sourdough. Can you tell I'm a wee proud? I hope I'm not overreacting. My family says I can do that, but I did moonwalk around my kitchen when it came out of the oven, and I broke the process down in steps for any other wannabe bread makers out there. So, you're welcome. And now, as promised, I have my good friend Jonathan Wiggins, lead pastor of Rez Church in Loveland, Colorado, on with me this evening, and I'm so excited to bring this conversation to you. So, hey, Jonathan.
Hey, Shelley, thanks for letting me be part of this.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. I know I just kind of sprung it on you, and you were so kind to agree. We're more than 6 feet apart, so I guess we're good, right?
Yeah, we're about 1,200 miles apart, and I hope that's never a minimum requirement.
You know, I read something today that just tickled me. I wish I could take credit for this, but I can't. But it was funny. It said, you know, I never thought that old maxim, I wouldn't touch him or her with a 6 foot pole, would ever become policy. And I thought that, you know, this is true. That's policy now where it wasn't. But Jonathan, let's just get into this conversation. You have so much wisdom, and I want to bring that wisdom to the people that listen to the All Things Southern podcast. So earlier in the week, you were on Facebook Live just laying down some word. I mean, just really sharing some good stuff. And I want to lead you back into that conversation and pick your brain a little bit. I want to begin with you explaining to my audience why you have the gift of goodbye. That was priceless. Talk to me a little bit about that.
About the gift of goodbye, huh? Okay, we're going to start right there, are we?
We're jumping in.
I love it. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on this this podcast. Shelley, you are one of my favorite people. I love the way you encourage people so solidly, so excellently. You bring your A game every time you step up for one of these events, one of the times that you speak, one of the times you present, when you write books. You are just, you're literally a world-class person. What you contribute, but also just a world-class person. I know your family and every one of them are a credit to you. So it's an honor for me to be a part of this. So the gift of goodbye would never be something, Shelley, that I would apply to you.
Thank you.
but I have noticed, well, let me say it this way. I've heard it said that you are the average health, attitude, and income of your five closest friends.
Right.
And I think sometimes we fail to properly really just understand how important it is to have the right friends, friends that can get us where we want to go, friends who at least esteem and respect our values, if not actively help us move toward the destiny that I believe God has for us and our wins. And so the gift of goodbye gets to the idea of when you have a connection with someone who you know, there are life-giving friends, and then there are life other kind of friends. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. identify friends that are distractions from you, that they're always trying to get something from you but not contributing, if they're guilting, controlling. I really believe that we need to be the people that have the courage to say, okay, no more of this. I still want you to be in my life, but I'm not going to be treated this way. But if they can't respect those boundaries, then I call this, as a pastor, I believe in spiritual gifts, and I call this the gift of goodbye. So it's where you're saying, look, I respect myself too much to be treated in a negative way over time. And so I'm not going to be mad. I don't have to work up, you know, into a frenzy over this. I'm just going to tell you that this behavior isn't helpful for me. I've asked you to stop. You haven't stopped. And so it's time for me to give you some space and some distance. And so I call that the gift of goodbye.
And I just love it. And, you know, I'm going to give you a kind of, we may have backed into the conversation, because I'm going to definitely allow you some time here to unpack that. And then everyone will understand that that's not coming from a place of just cutting people off. But you're one of the best people that I know of at continuing to pour into someone's life, but being able to have a boundary where you are healthy, even as you reach, you know, even as you reach out. So as you begin talking about these defining boundaries, the ideas of how we can do this, and I was listening to you, and you started talking about an injury that you had and an epiphany that came with it. You called them compensation injuries. There was such a great spiritual analogy that came out of that, that as a result of us not having that gift of goodbye, as you say it, or not having the ability to set boundaries around us and what happens to us as a result of that, those compensation injuries and how you see those paralleling, you know, our inability to set boundaries.
Sure. Well, I was thinking in terms of what happens for people. You know, it's amazing, Shelley, how many of us will put up with toxic behaviors over months, years, decades, so that, you know, because we don't want to be rude. We don't want to be angry. And so we end up dealing with things, living with things, compromising our own values, our own dignity, in a way to enable someone else's abusive behavior. And so I was thinking through this, and I've been trying to stay healthy through this season of isolation and social distancing. So I have some gym equipment, and I was doing a leg press, and I was feeling a little confident. And Shelley, I'm older than I've ever been. I'm probably about to have a good mixture as being overly confident and older than you've ever been. And so I threw on 100 extra pounds and started pressing this weight, and I heard a pop and felt a rip.
Uh-oh.
And sustained a groin injury and I think a sublingual hernia. And it's one of those things that I'm recovering, but I know it's not so urgent that I need to go see a doctor right this second. I just called a fitness expert who deals with fitness sports injuries. And then I have my brother is an RN. And they were talking about how I can just take good care of myself for a couple of weeks, see how much I heal naturally, and then maybe I'll go to a doctor later. But one of the things they said to me was, as painful as this will be, because you're hurting, walk normally. Walk with the right posture. Don't overcompensate for the injury. And I was like, well, why? It hurts to do that. Why wouldn't I just put more weight on the other leg? And And they said, because they see this all the time, that when one part of your body is in pain, so you compensate and you actually change the way you walk or change the way you function, you can damage your body much more through what you've just called compensation injury, which is a medical thing, by trying to compensate for that pain rather than walking in a way that is more normalized. And so for me, it's an easy connection to make, that when people are abused over many years, if we just kind of, instead of having a boundary and then behind that, what gives the boundary power is the gift of goodbye. It's like, hey, these are my boundaries, you know, like in a marriage, if you hit me, I will not spend the night here.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that. What gives that power is the ability to say goodbye, even if it's just for a night. But if you're not willing to do that over time, you compensating for that person's behavior, I think, hurts you much more than just those temporary boundaries that can bring transformation.
Wow. That is so good. I think one of the reasons why I enjoyed your live the other morning so much is because it was like nailing me right between the eyes.
Okay.
It was like nailing me to the wall with just some different relational situations where I tend to be that person that wants everybody to just, can we just all get along? Can we just, you know, I just want to be nice, want everybody to get along. And there are some different areas where I need to be able to say, and I will acknowledge just that with only within the past year, I've kind of made some progress there. Okay. Where I can find that I'm being able to not be ugly, not be dramatic, not have a hissy fit, but just express, I don't like the way you did that. You know, that it made me feel this way. And so I see some growth in me, but Jonathan, I need it more. I need so much more. And as you begin to define how to set those boundaries, I'm not even joking when I say I was taking notes. I'm like, yep, Shelly needs this. Shelly needs this. And then I began to think so many other people do as well. You had kind of a list. I picked out some of the ones that were really applicable to me. And one of those was that you don't have to be perfect to set limits. Talk about that, because we do feel like, oh, I can't tell anyone else what they can or can't do because I may, you know, they may turn that back on me. The old adage, one finger's pointing out and four pointing back, you know. So talk about that.
Well, first of all, let me give a little definition of what boundaries are, because boundaries, that's not the same thing as screaming, shouting, trying to overpower someone, or trying to think of yourself as better than anyone else. Mm-hmm. But boundaries are simply just guidelines, rules, limits that a person creates to identify for themselves what are reasonable, safe, and permissible behavior, ways other people can treat them. And I think since we're all flawed and none of us are perfect, that each of us has dignity and we're made in God's image, I think mm-hmm. we do have the right to say, I'm not going to control you, but I want you to understand you're not going to control me either. Mm-hmm. And so when we sometimes have friends that are manipulative or controlling or just have never had a reality check, you know,
and then
you say, hey, I don't like it when you know, like sometimes I'll see in marriages, because I do some counseling, where a wife will call her husband when they're angry with each other, by his father's name.
Uh-oh, that's not good, John.
Yeah, I mean, that's for me, that's a hard boundary. I'm not my father, I am me.
Yeah.
And so then you say, hey, please don't say that to me again. And I can talk to you more about than just about being perfect. But when you do lay down the boundary, a lot of times that person will say, well, who do you think you are? You called me a name last week. I can do this if I want to. And then suddenly you're like, you're right. I'm just a person and maybe I shouldn't set this boundary. And I've just learned over time that you don't have to be perfect or flawless to set a boundary, because a boundary is not really a judgment of the other person. It's just saying, hey, here's how I respect myself and I'm asking you to agree with that.
Oh, man. Can we just say that again? I love that. I love that. I probably won't say it right. A boundary is not a judgment on another person. Did we all hear that? The boundary is not judging that person. A boundary is you're saying, this is what is healthy for me. That is a noteworthy quote. Now, when we set out to create these boundaries, to make these healthy boundaries, one of the first things that anyone is going to say, and I want to hear how you would address it, but it's hardest with family. It's one thing with friends that you can create some distance. You can continue to love them and create some distance. Give us some practical advice for when is a closer family member that you really will be in a lot of contact with, which means you can't create quite the distance. Do you understand what I'm asking?
Absolutely, yeah. So first of all, name your limits. If, for example, when I was much younger, my older brother would call me a nickname, and he meant it, I think, in innocent fun, but I didn't like it. It felt demeaning to me. Mm-hmm. And I just said, hey, I don't want you to call me that anymore. And he got into kind of a rage because it hurt his feelings, because he wasn't trying to be hard on me, but I wanted mm-hmm. to understand. And so he got mad and didn't talk to me for a couple of days, but then never called me that nickname again. I think sometimes we think because somebody blows up and they get mad that it's a fail. But the truth is, when you're starting to lead your own life, you're starting to stand up for yourself, people will adjust. And sometimes that looks like a rage or an emotional tsunami of some kind. And so you just have to be ready to be steady. Mm-hmm. I call it the gray rock approach, where, you know, if you ever drive through the Rocky Mountains where I live, there's a lot of gray rock. And And it's beautiful. You see these mountains and trees and elk. And not one time in my whole time of living in Colorado has anyone in my family said, look at that gray rock. And I think if we bring a gray rock approach, meaning we're not bringing ego into it. We're not bringing anger into it. We're just a steady, solid person. And we're saying, hey, I don't appreciate when you do this, mm-hmm. say this, I just won't live with this anymore. Mm-hmm. The thing is, noisy and dramatic emotions are not necessary to set boundaries. And so sometimes we let somebody, quote, run over us until the point we get angry. And by the time we're laying down boundaries, it is a judgment. It is harsh. And I think we have
to. Oh my gosh. You're nailing me again, Jonathan. You're nailing me again. Because, you know, I told you earlier that I have this, you know, let's just be nice. Can we all get along? Want to be sweet and not confront the way I need to. And I have recognized it and I've been making some strides. But that is what I have experienced in my life is when it really got my attention that, you know, this is not what I want to do, because inevitably, if I would not confront, if I would not establish that boundary, then I reacted in a way that I wasn't happy with. When if we take your approach and we set those gray rock boundaries without all the emotion and drama attached, then we can do it the right way, right?
Absolutely. And with family, you actually have an opportunity that you don't have with a lot of other people. You have so much frequency. You're seeing each other every mm-hmm. day in some cases. Though the gift of goodbye does not have to be quite as dramatic. So, for example, if someone is an abusive personality and you see them every day, then you just say, hey, if you do this again, I'm going to spend the night away. Now, I'll be back tomorrow. It's not the end of the world, right? Or if you see this family member or someone once a week, you just skip one rotation. I think one of the issues that I have that I've had in my early life is when I would set boundaries, I would set them way too long. Mm-hmm. With my kids, I would ground my children for a month at a time. See, when I was a kid, my dad was abusive and he would ground me, Shelly, for a year at a time.
Oh, no way. Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I thought a month was no time at all. And I had a family therapist tell me, no, you don't need to ground your kids for a month. Ground them for a single day.
Yeah.
And you'll be amazed if you take that cell phone away for a single day, then you have another opportunity to train them and raise them up the next day. Right.
I think that is so wise. If you do not, you open a door there for bitterness.
I think to do this well, Shelly, it reminds me of the teaching in the scripture that says we need to be cunning as serpents and innocent as doves.
Right.
I think sometimes us good church people, we're only as innocent as doves and we're not very strategic and cunning. Mm-hmm. But then by the time we get angry at somebody, we become cunning and we lose our innocence. Mm-hmm. Jesus is mm-hmm. saying, oh, you need to be innocent as a dove, meaning be willing to accept someone's apology at face value, be willing to forgive quickly, don't feel the need to punish, but be cunning as a serpent, meaning don't just keep allowing yourself to be sucked into cycles that are toxic because you're not willing to set a strategy to change mm-hmm. the pattern.
Oh, wow. That's really good. You also talked about caring for yourself and why that was a good thing and not a bad thing.
Yeah, the best thing you can give your friends, your audience, my church, our spouses, the best thing we can give another person is a healthy, self-respecting and inspired us. Mm. I think of you know, when we're not very many people are flying these days, but when we do, there's always that instruction about the oxygen mask, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. One of the things they say is when the oxygen masks deploy and someone next to you needs help, put the oxygen mask over your own nose and mouth first and then help the person mm-hmm. next to you. And I think that's a really powerful picture of how we need to do life. It doesn't mean we need to be selfish, but I am the only person, Shelly, that can exercise my body and make me healthy. I'm the only person that can pray and make myself spiritually healthy. I'm mm-hmm. the only person that can make myself rest and honor you know, those rhythms that God would establish for us to be healthy. Nobody else can do that for me. So that is my, in a mm-hmm. way, my act of worship so that I can bring the best parts of myself.
That's good. I've kept you longer than I intended to already, but I want you to hang on if you can a few more minutes.
Sure.
I'm so enjoying the conversation with you. And I wanted to ask you to help us with this boundary or defining this. So here's the thing, you know, we can't just be, you know, running around. I know you're not asking us to just setting boundaries 24/7, just all day, every day, you know, just setting boundaries. So it's just wise to say, when do you set boundaries? You've told us how to, and you've told us what they are. Now, when do we set them?
This is a great question. Let me just unpack a few thoughts here. When you feel your own dignity being stripped away, and I don't mean just once, like it's a mistake, but over and over, when toxic behaviors become repeating patterns, you know, it's conflict is inevitable, and good friendships, good marriages are conflict rich. They're not relationships that avoid talking about the things that need to be talked about. But the idea of the conflict is that we're both supposed to become enriched. We're supposed to learn from those things so we don't repeat the same things. And so when the toxic behaviors become repeating patterns, it's time for a boundary. When you find yourself more concerned about the approval of that person than standing up for what's true, healthy, or good, then you're really under a controlling kind of personality, and it's time for a boundary. But probably the biggest one is when you do what I call take the mask off, and you're very vulnerable with someone, and they take that vulnerability, weaponize it, beat you up with it. I think that's an incredible betrayal, and you need boundaries. I had a friend who said that his ex-wife, he said when he was married to his ex-wife, it was like Donald Trump being married to CNN.
What a picture. Oh my God. No wonder they're not married anymore.
There's no benefit of the doubt. You know, if Donald Trump cured cancer, the CNN would say the next day, he put all the cancer doctors out of work, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always say if he walked on water, they would say, I told you he could not swim. I told you he couldn't swim.
Cathead biscuits, shrimp Creole, the kind of eating that sticks to your soul.
You're listening to All Things Southern, brought to you by Providence Church in Lake Providence, Louisiana, where they want you to know you are loved. Oh my gosh, I love all those wise ideas on when we are to set our boundaries. Jonathan, I'm going to take a hard right turn and throw just a really crazy, funny, wonderful question at you now as we close out the podcast that I so enjoy asking my guests. And now, granted, I like self-effacing humor and some people do not, but it is one of my life's motto that if you can learn to laugh at yourself, you just get to laugh all the time, or at least I do, because I'm always doing something that I can make my own self laugh at something embarrassing or, you know, that I did. So my question to you, my good friend, Pastor Jonathan Wiggins from Res Church in Loveland, Colorado, what is the most embarrassing, or I have to say the most, what is something embarrassing that you have done or said?
Okay. I remember I was in Lake Providence, Louisiana, in a pastor's home. I was hanging out with the pastor, and I looked into his, in their kitchen, and I looked into his living room, and I saw the most beautiful girl I've ever seen in my life. Her name is Amy. And I thought, I mean, like, I had brain damage. It's like when I saw Amy, just the top of her head. In fact, I was looking, she was sitting in a recliner watching TV, and I was behind her, so I could just see the top of her beautiful, symmetrical, gorgeous, perfect head. And I thought, I got to impress this girl, but I was a teenager with brain damage. And so in my mind, what I thought I was going to do is run toward the back of the recliner, put my hands on the back, jump over and do like a little cartwheel over the chair, land in front of her.
Wow.
Like impressive, you know?
Wow, that would have been impressive.
I told you I was brain damaged. So I ran toward the back of the recliner. I put my hands on the back of the recliner, and it reclined. And so instead of going up and over, I went straight forward. And this poor girl had no idea what was coming. Her lazy boy suddenly straightened completely out. She looked like she was on the luge in the Olympics. You know what I mean? But I am flying over her. She's straight back. I'm flying over her. And she has this water glass, like a heavy water glass. And her glass is moving one direction and my forehead's moving the other. And bang, oh. Forehead. So I land on the other side and my forehead is pulsing with every beat of my heart. And so it's like over. And then Amy starts laughing at me. I'm in pain. And the worst thing in the world, Shelley, is for a guy to have a beautiful woman laugh at him, right?
Right.
So I looked up at her and she saw my face and she starts laughing at a new level. She says, "Look at your face." And so I run out and I go to the bathroom and that glass had punched a perfectly centered zero on my forehead. I had a zero on my forehead. Now,
that was
humiliating, but all these years later, 4 years later, she's my wife.
Oh, yes. I was waiting for the big finish. I wanted everyone to know this gorgeous female who alerted you to the zero on your head married you. Oh, there's the grace of God, right, Jonathan? Right there.
Absolutely.
That was an absolutely great story. I cannot even imagine why it reminded me of this, other than it's a first meeting type of thing, trying to make an impression. I guess it's the reason it came to my mind. So I will return the favor by telling our listening audience one of my most embarrassing incidents. I was speaking at a large event in Shreveport, Louisiana, and I did not know until I got there that a lady named Teresa Witherspoon was also going to be on the head table speaking. Now, I don't know if everyone immediately recognizes that name. If you're not a basketball addict like I am and my family, you may not know, but she is I think she's still coaching in the WNBA. I know she's in the Hall of Fame. But Jonathan, Teresa Witherspoon is a rather small African-American woman compared to yours truly. You know, I'm what, 5'9"? She's maybe 5'6", or, you know, 5'7", considerably shorter than me. And again, I'm Caucasian and she's African-American. So we've got the story set up, right?
Yes.
But Shelly here is super excited about the idea of meeting Teresa Witherspoon. I've been a fan for years. I watched her play at Louisiana Tech. I watched her career all through college, you know, going into the pros and coaching. I mean, this was just so exciting to me. So I go to the head table. Everyone is standing. I have on some big honking heels. So now I'm like, 7 inches taller than this woman. And when she turns around and the moment is there and I'm going to get to introduce myself, right? This is what I did. I stuck my hand down toward this beautiful, much smaller African-American woman. And I said, "Hi, I am so happy to meet you. I am Teresa Witherspoon." I wish I could paint the picture of what her face looked like as she looked up at me thinking, "No, you big, tall, crazy white woman, you are not. I don't know who you are, but you are not Teresa Witherspoon."
That is amazing. I love that, Teresa.
Yes. Yes. And so I did have to, you know, backpedal a whole lot there, but it is a great story. And, you know, when we can laugh at ourselves, right, we're further ahead.
Absolutely. That's amazing. I've said dumb things and it's just good to know great people like you sometimes make mistakes too.
Oh, yeah. Right. You're so charming, Jonathan. Well, look, thank you so much for being on and just laying down a lot of good wisdom for us. You have an open door here at All Things Southern to anytime you have something that you want to say or need to say or just want to chat, just holler at me and I'll get you back on.
Hey, this was fun. Thanks, Teresa.
Thanks, zero.